This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
WNYC Studios is supported by W.W. Norton & Company, publishers of The Road to Freedom, Economics and the Good Society, by Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph E. Stiglitz. The Road to Freedom, essential reading for those committed to the American ideal of an economic and political system that delivers well-being, opportunity, and meaningful freedoms for all. The Road to Freedom, available now wherever books are sold.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
For the past 25 years, starting when she was all of 14 years old, the singer Robin has been on the cutting edge of pop music. Her sound is sparse, complex, ahead of the trends, and she always seems like she's writing from a few years into the future. For most of those 25 years making music, Robin has avoided the big hit-making producers who somehow put their own stamp on an artist. Instead, she's become almost an oxymoron, an indie pop star. And while she's respected, even frankly adored by so many critics, she's also genuinely popular, with the top 10 singles and multiple Grammy nominations to prove it. Robin was born Robin Carlson in Sweden, where she still lives. And her last album, Body Talk, came out in 2010. But for most of the intervening years, Robin has been pretty much out of public view. Following a breakup and a close friend's death, she slipped into a depression serious enough that she had trouble getting out of bed sometimes or leaving the house. She eventually started recording again and recently released an album called Honey. The New Yorker's Gia Tolentino said of it, "The force of her conviction continues to hold together what often seems impossible, musically or otherwise. Maximum sadness felt as the bedrock of absolute joy." Robin talked with me from her office in Sweden last week. Robin, this is your first album in 8 years. Is it strange to be back in the limelight after all that time? You're touring, and it's been a long time for touring, too. What's it like being back out in the hot lights?
It's nice. I'm enjoying myself. Maybe in a way I'm in a different place than I was last time I released an album, in the sense that I'm maybe not as, like, how can I put it? Not as, like, willing maybe to work as hard. Like, I really enjoy my downtime. I really enjoy being in the studio. I really enjoy, like, having my own time, basically.
You wrote your first song when you were 11 years old, which is pretty darn early. What were you listening to? What singers, what music was meaning the most to you? You signed with a record company at 14. So a lot of music must have been coming at you, shaping this young voice, this young singer, this young composer. I wonder what was most important.
I loved Michael Jackson. I listened to Off the Wall and Thriller a lot. I think I heard my first Prince album when I was about 8. It was the Batman soundtrack. and I loved it. I still do, actually. I think it's an underrated. I mean, I think TLC made maybe the biggest impression on me as a teenager, because they were young women and they were, you know, quite tough and, like, strong and still girly and cute and fun. I think they were probably the group. If you would have asked me, you know, as a 15-year-old, I would have said TLC.
And when you listen to that those early songs of yours, the early music, and it's now quite a while ago, it's almost 20 years ago. What are you hearing in the young Robin?
I think I'm hearing you know, a lot of like will, a lot of willpower, a lot of like energy. Sometimes I feel like I can understand where I was trying to move in a different direction, but maybe really didn't know how. And it took me a long time until I actually created the environment where I felt like I could make music that was more on my own terms. But I think the fact that I was writing still gave me like an outlet.
When you were just 18, you released My Truth, and though your first album was released in the United States, this one was not. Mm-hmm. What happened?
Well, I just don't think that the label that I worked with at the time got it. You know, it wasn't a commercial album.
But you were writing about your experience in abortion, and that's something that most American pop stars certainly wouldn't touch at the time. And not only did you sing about it, you refused to make any changes in order to reach some imagined big audience. Mm-hmm. That seems a pretty tough thing to do, no? What was that episode like for you?
Well, I don't think it was a tough decision. I was more kind of amazed of like how narrow-minded the label I was with at the time was. Not here in Sweden, but in America, I think that song became an issue. That wasn't a big deal for me, actually. I'm happy that I wrote the song and that I kind of stuck by it. So I knew you would, and I never imagined you'd be so good, and it hurts me so to let you go. I want you to live, but I'm not all I want to give.
What's your process like as a writer of songs?
I think writing continuously, like having a routine, is really important, at least for me. But then I really believe also that some ideas, they just show up when they're ready. You might have to like get the engine like going and warm it up for a long time, but like once it's like ready, once you're like in the zone, it's easier for those ideas to show up. And I don't know where that comes from. I mean, I'm not superstitious in that way. I wouldn't say that I think they come from God, because I don't feel like I believe in God, but I believe in that they come from the unconsciousness, like a deeper place that's harder to get to by thinking.
Well, something equally mysterious happened after Body Talk came out. After it came out, you were a huge success, a big star, 5 albums. And then suddenly you went, at least where the public was concerned, silent. Are you able to talk about what happened and why you withdrew from your public life?
Well, I mean, I was ready to make an album in 2014. I was preparing to, like, go back into the studio. And then, you know, I think, like, for a lot of people, life was just, you know, unexpected things happened. And
you experienced some real losses at that time.
Yeah, exactly. A friend of mine died, and I was in a relationship that ended around the same time. I felt like the things that I was trying to, or the things that I was writing about, were quite, you know, layered and complex. They weren't quick. like Missing You is a really good example. I wrote the melody and like the beginning of the lyrics in 2014 in July. And Christian died just right after that, and my friend, and I really didn't know how to finish those lyrics at that point. Because it started out as a love song, and then it became about, you know, my friend that had passed away, and then the relationship I was in kind of fell apart, and then it became more about that, you know. So it was like this ongoing thing of like where my experiences were just changing all the time, and I didn't know how to put all of that into the lyrics. So I just kind of left the song. I worked on other things, even though it was slow and it took time. But I was, you know, I was preparing. I was exploring myself, I guess, in order to be able to put words on all of those experiences eventually. There's this empty space you left behind. Now you're not here with me.
I keep digging through a waste of time. But the picture, you did something that's pretty unusual. In the modern world, a lot of people go see a therapist to deal with depression or loss or heartbreak or whatever it might be. You went into it in a way that in the modern world doesn't happen very much anymore. So you went several times a week into real, what I guess is some traditional psychoanalysis. I wonder, what was the effects on your life and what was the effects on your work of that psychoanalytical work that you were doing?
I started it way before I started making this album, like years before, but it wasn't until all these things happened in my life where I really felt like it started to, kind of give like real results. You know, I think the therapy definitely had an effect on my music, but I also think that, you know, these things that happened in my life basically also changed my therapy. It was like, you know, it's like it works both ways, I think. But the commitment of going to psychoanalysis is a big one. You have to kind of, you have to do it for some years. And I guess looking back at it now, I can kind of see how you never really know when it's going to start making sense. You just kind of have to commit anyway.
I'd like to break down, if you don't mind, the musical elements of Honey. So let's start by listening to a clip of that. Can you describe the writing of that, the figuring out of the melody and the part that you're singing?
So I was working with this Casio synthesizer for a long time, and I was making songs on these chords that me and Marcus, who plays in my band, and it was really just about the beat for me for like a year or so.
And you're playing around with kind of club music background here, right?
That was what I was doing, but it sounded like something else. We had this like idea of making this like gooey kind of soft production that was still mm-hmm. relating to, you know, club music, and Joseph decided to like make his own sample. So we called it like the sauce. It's processed through, you know, lots of things to make it kind of feel like it's moving. And I think, to me, that's really what club music is about.
So I want to ask a question that's more about pop music in general. Pop music, dance music, it's a lot of it is associated with sex, with hypersexualized imagery, a lot of it, for years and years. And you've somehow avoided that. You sing about love and sex, but you don't sexualize or over-sexualize your own image or who you are in these songs. And that seems a kind of magic trick too. Is it something you think about a lot?
I actually don't. I wish I maybe thought about it more. I think that for me, it was always, like, when I was younger, very, like, important, or I just felt like I needed to kind of protect myself. I think today it's much easier to, you know, have pink hair and at the same time call yourself a feminist. And I think when I was growing up, being a feminist was like, you know, being a tomboy was or felt liberating to me. And I think I was. So I don't think that I, like, gave myself space enough to be a sensual person as an artist until way later. And I like things to be layered. I like things to be complicated and complex. And I think if you're allowing things to be, you know, somehow complicated, you can be as sexy as you want, you know.
Robin, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for talking to me.
All the best to you, and good luck in everything.
Yeah, you too. Thank you. Bye.
Robin's album, Honey, came out in the fall.
WNYC Studios is supported by W.W. Norton & Company, publishers of The Road to Freedom, Economics and the Good Society, by Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph E. Stiglitz. The Road to Freedom, essential reading for those committed to the American ideal of an economic and political system that delivers well-being, opportunity, and meaningful freedoms for all. The Road to Freedom, available now wherever books are sold.